Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Welcome back to the Hashtag Finance Master show, the podcast where we explore what it takes to build a world-class finance function and world-class finance careers. Today, we are diving into a topic that hits close to home for most finance professionals: the constant pressure to do more, achieve more, and move faster. Whether it's chasing the next promotion, the next exciting project, or just trying to keep up with expectations, the struggle is real. My guest today, Michaela Daly, has built a successful career in finance, but she's also passionate about helping others navigate the personal side of that journey, managing stress, avoiding burnout, and finding balance while still progressing in your career. We'll explore why so many finance professionals always feel behind, what's driving that feeling, and how to redefine success in a way that's both sustainable and rewarding. So Michaela, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So Michaela, you've built a successful career in finance, but like many, you've seen the toll that the profession can take. So why do you think so many finance professionals feel that they're constantly behind and under pressure to do more?
Well, I think we both know that finance is highly pressured environment as it is. You know, you have so many deadlines, you finish one month end and one management reporting pack, and before you know it, you are on to the next. Also, you have projects running throughout the year. You know, there is a lot of finance transformation going on at the moment. So it is highly pressurized. You have the need for things to be accurate, because something can seem as a small error, but it might have a big financial impact, right? So that leaves very little room for a pressure somewhere else in your life. And I think it's not just the feeling of falling behind. I think it's the feeling of constantly on, constantly trying to chase your tail, and that I find many finance professionals struggle. And especially the higher you go, the more pressure you feel, because obviously the stakes are higher, you know?
No, absolutely. I even, you know, just remember from my early careers where I worked as a financial controller in a big company, and, you know, reflecting on those days, it's almost like we had maybe 1 month in a year where we could actually do some sort of development work, like writing an SOP or something else. The rest was just really filled with standard work. Of course, things have progressed a little bit since then, and we have more technology available and we can do things faster. But I don't think that feeling really has gone away, if I should be honest. And you mentioned also, you know, the more senior you go, the bigger the pressure. Even you have teams, then everything is just piled on top of you. And some leaders at least feel the need to protect the team as well for all that, you know, stuff that gets piled on. And that, of course, just means it ends up on the leader. So, the pressure, you know, just keeps rising. But from your perspective, how do ambition and, you know, comparison with others play into this feeling, especially in high-performing finance environments?
So I think finance attracts ambitious people, right? It's professionals who want to have successful careers and they want to progress up that ladder. And I think ambition is a good thing, but if it comes without boundaries, it quickly becomes self-pressure. And in terms of the comparison, I think we are all a little bit guilty of that, right? And I see it doesn't matter at which level you are at, whether, you know, you are just newly qualified accountant or you are at the financial control level. If you see your peers taking the next step on the ladder, it sometimes makes you feel like, oh, should I now, you know, try to chase that? Should I now make my move? And I think it's the worst thing, comparison, because it actually takes a joy away from your own achievements if you're constantly comparing yourself to others.
Yeah, and I'm 100% on board with that. I remember, I think it's probably the first three promotions I got. You know, I feel like I fought hard for them. I felt like I got them too late. You know, I don't know if everyone always feels like that. And then, you know, when the promotion was announced, I saw, well, oh, three of my colleagues got promoted as well. Then it didn't feel so special anymore. I mean, do you think many people are feeling like that, that, you know, even if you get something, others get the same, and then it doesn't really feel good anymore. Is that something you see as well out there?
Yes, I do. And I think it's a good thing to be self-aware of that and recognizing that, because if you don't, and you then constantly move the mark, the benchmark, the goal, you know, you're constantly chasing something and you're never happy with what you actually got. So to be self-aware and to check back in with yourself and recognizing that, you know, the only person worth comparing yourself, as we see everywhere and read everywhere, is yourself yesterday, is yourself a year ago. You know, have you made a progress that you wanted to make? Are you on the right path, or is it going slower than you thought that it would? But it is just your own path and your own journey that really matters, because different people have a different skills, they have different goals, they have different backgrounds, and it's all, you know, really irrelevant to yourself, you know.
Yeah, this is great insight, Miguel. You know, obviously I was like that when I was in corporate, and clearly it wasn't doing me any good. And now, having been an entrepreneur for a couple of years, what I always do is exactly like you said. I look back a year and ask myself, am I in a better place? Is my company in a better place than we were a year ago? Yes or no. Of course, it's never as binary, but usually you know if you are or not. And then, I mean, if I'm not, I know I need to do something, either for myself or for the company. But if I am, good, then things are working. I can move forward and I don't need to think so much more about it. Are there companies out there that are growing faster than we are? Probably. Are there individuals that are rising faster in their careers, whatever they are, than I am? Probably. But for myself, am I progressing the way I want? Am I in a better place now than a year ago? Yes. Okay, then it's good. Because like you say, you know, if you get stuck on the comparison, you will always lose. Because
yeah,
you know, that's just the fact of life, right? There can only be so and so many people that can go with a promotion every 6 months and become the CEO of the company in a short period of time. You know, it doesn't happen like that, right? For most people, it's messy and, you know, it doesn't progress the way you want always. But if you feel like you're in a better place than a year ago, it should be okay.
That's exactly it. And to be honest with you, that's not just in finance, right? Like, as you said yourself, you're now in a different area. You have your own business, you're an entrepreneur. And I think it's just human that we have this little element of ourselves that we compare against others. And if you're self-aware of it, you know that the moment you compare yourself against somebody else, you lose any joy of what you have actually achieved so far. You know, you can be doing really well and then you compare yourself against somebody who's doing better, and immediately you feel like what you are doing is not good enough. So I think it's important to be self-aware of that.
100%, because, you know, it's a terrible thing to take away all the progress and merits that you've actually achieved just because someone else, and you don't know their situation, you don't know their background necessarily, and all the things that were in place for them to succeed. So it's probably even an unfair comparison. So don't do that to yourself,
yeah.
I guess is the message from here, right? So you said that, you know, it's not just in finance, it happens everywhere. But do you think the structure of finance teams and how a finance career has typically happened in the last, you know, 10, 20 years, do you think that contributes to this always running, always on culture that we see in the finance function?
Yes, because when you think about it, and it's not just finance, a lot of careers are like that. It's like a pyramid, right? You have a lot of newly qualified accountants entering the job market, but there is only so many positions the higher you go up the ladder. So there's only, you know, so many director of FP&A or CFO type of roles. So that immediately becomes really competitive, because people who are entering finance are ambitious and they do want to progress up that ladder. So that definitely contributes to that always on culture, trying to prove yourself, you know, working the extra hours, trying to be extra visible. You know, it just all that contributes to the pressure that you feel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because there is this pyramid structure, right, that you have five team members, one leader, only one can become the leader if even any of them are becoming the leader, because of course the person could come from outside as well if the position is available. I think one trend, I don't know if I see it as much anymore today as I did maybe 5 or 10 years ago, but I'm sure it's still out there, is that we were trying to not just herald the leader and the general management career track, but just as much the specialist career track. Do you see that as a trend still out there, that companies are trying to more promote this specialist track, so that even if you don't become a manager, you can actually still progress quite high in the organization and really also get a very attractive compensation package? Do you see that still out there, or where are we at with this trend today?
Yeah, so I think now with the way the finance is going, that is going to be even more relevant. So having your niche, so for example, FP&A, you can still progress through the ladder on your FP&A journey. So it's not just the CFO role, it's not just the management pad. You can still progress, you can still improve your salary and everything, just owning your own line and your own pad and your own niche.
That's great, Jerry, because I think, you know, people need options, they need paths that doesn't necessarily just is a straight line up the ladder, right? Because it, you know, I think maybe I'm talking to an audience that doesn't necessarily go that far back, but I think most do. I once posted a picture of this Donkey Kong game, right, where as a person you have to kind of escape all the barrels and climb up some ladders, and it's really messy. And I think that's the career ladder these days, is that you may sometimes need to make lateral moves in order to get where you want, thinking that it's just a straight line of the ladder. It doesn't really exist anymore, except for maybe one in a million or whatever, right? So no point in chasing that. So obviously we also have to talk about, you know, stress and burnout, which can definitely happen when you're in a career situation that's not going the way you at least mentally picture it should be. So what are some early warning signs that someone might be heading towards burnout, or at least losing their motivation for that job?
Mm-hmm. So I want you to picture a bucket, right? Because that's how I think of burnout. And that bucket is getting filled drop by drop, and you are not paying the attention to the drops. The moment you start paying attention is when the bucket overflows. And that's what the burnout is. And so the drops or the signs that I think people should look out, I like to break them up into four categories. So you have the cognitive signs, you have the emotional signs, you have the physical signs, and the behavioral signs. So in terms of the cognitive signs, it's this brain mental fog where you can't think clearly. You know, it can be 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you need to read that email twice, because your memory is impacted, you know, your brain is working at the full capacity. Another cognitive sign would be little decisions start to feel overwhelming. You know, it's like you start to procrastinate a little bit more. In terms of the emotional signs, it's things that you used to enjoy, you feel indifferent to. You become a little bit more cynical. It can be the attitude of, you know, what is the point? Nothing ever changes here. It can also be that the little things tip you off, you know, little things agitate you way more than they used to before. You give much larger response to the little things, and it is because your emotional regulation is just not there anymore. It's impacted by being burned out. Physical signs, they are the obvious ones. You know, you can catch more colds, you can get cold sores. If you have autoimmune condition, it can get inflamed. Let's say you have arthritis, you're having more pains, like your body is paying the price. And the behavioral ones, that would be things like you try to switch your brain off, but you just can't. You know, it can be evening, but you're still thinking about work. It can be weekend, but you're still thinking about work. You try to maybe watch more TV in the hope that you're going to switch your brain, or scrolling on Instagram or whatever it is, LinkedIn, you know. Or you overcompensate by maybe drinking more wine, smoking more cigarettes, eating more bad foods. That was my case, you know, trying to comfort myself with sugar. So the signs are different for everybody, but they are the things to usually watch out for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the thing about these signs is that you don't see them first yourself. It's, you know, the people around you that sees them. And I'll give an example from my own career, right? So I can't say for a fact that I was necessarily heading for burnout or wasn't burnout, but you know, when I left corporate life after trying to push up the ladder and maybe feeling I didn't get where I wanted to go, and then, you know, becoming part of my own company, I remember in that first 6 months, you know, first it was my son saying, and he was, what was he at that time? He was maybe 7 or 8 years old. He said, "Hey, you know, Dad, it's so great you have this new job because, you know, you're home early and it's just really nice to have you around." And, you know, a few weeks later, it was my dad saying to me, "You seem more relaxed and calm about the situation. So it's really nice to see how this whole change has benefited you." Right. And I didn't see or feel that myself, especially because we were in the middle of COVID, and my whole business has basically, you know, come to a halt because everything got canceled. But they could see it, what I couldn't see, and I think it's the same with all the people out there. Would you say that that's pretty much true, that everyone else sees it before you see it?
Yes. Just the other day, I had a client and she was quite upset because they were playing this game and where the kids had to imitate someone, or you had to pick someone, and they imitated her by pretending to be always on the phone, you know, and she didn't see that. And for her 7-year-old to see that, that was the wake up call that she needed. So too often you are just too busy. You just keep going. You tell yourself, you know, you get over this month end, you get over this quarter, you get over this project, but it never really finishes. You just keep going and you don't see it, but the other people see it. And often it is the relationships around you that are also paying the price, because you become more agitated with people. You are not really present in the moments where you should be, and you will regret of it later. You know, and I think anybody who is at the kind of CFO and CEO level knows that feeling, because it is challenging to juggle a really demanding job and a family life. And at that point as well, you're most likely, you know, having not only children, you're also having aging parents. So it is full on, and other people can see you struggling before you see yourself struggling.
Yeah, no, 100%. So, you know, how does burnout then typically show up in finance roles, and why is it sometimes ignored or perhaps even normalized?
So I think when people imagine burnout, they imagine this complete crash, right? But that's not what it is. A burnout person is still performing. They are still delivering. It is just that the cost of that performance is higher than it used to be. It takes more energy for them and more effort for them to create the same output that it used to, right? So you might not necessarily see it for ages. And then either the person leaves or they go on a sick leave, you know? So it is invisible, I think, in certain ways, because everybody who is working in finance, or who I have ever worked with, are high achievers. They care about the output that they produce. They give their 100%, but it just takes so much out of them over time. And obviously, the further it goes, you know, there is the more errors might appear, you know. And I think it's normalized because the culture rewards the environment that actually leads to burnout. You know, like, we reward people who work the extra hours. You know, if somebody worked until 10 o'clock, they get praised for delivering the project or the month end. Oh, they were here until 10 o'clock last night to get this over a line. Or, you know, she worked on her holidays to get this investment on board. Or, you know, she worked at the weekend to finish the quarter reporting and things like that. And it gets rewarded, it gets recognized. And that's exactly the behavior that leads to the burnout, you know. So in reality, it is dysfunction.
Yeah. And then I would say, you know, if I should add some color to it, you know, sometimes it's a thin line, right? Because, you know, if I go back to my days as a finance leader, you know, I worked in the US, for instance, once as a finance manager. And of course, I was ambitious as well. And I wanted us as a team, as a small team, to do the month-end close faster. So instead of closing on the fourth working day, I think, and it's a small entity, right? So we didn't take that long. We wanted to do it on the second working day, or even sometimes on the first working day. So we set some ambitious goals that we as a team could then work towards. And it wasn't like, you know, I left at 4 and the team would leave at 10. You know, we were working towards this together. And if we succeeded, we would celebrate and maybe even go out for lunch or dinner. If we failed, you know, we figured out why and so forth. But I never really felt like the team was heading towards burnout or were feeling stressed about it, because it was an exciting goal we were going towards. And I knew that, you know, okay, after a few days, it ends. And then, you know, we get into a more normal routine. And I think that can be okay. But when it's not okay, it's when you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So if you're going through a period where you say, okay, now it's going to be a year end, it's going to take 1.5 months, it's going to be really hard work, long nights, you know, pizza in the office, but then it's done and then it's okay afterwards. But if you feel like it's always like that, no light at the end of the tunnel, that's when you need to really put your foot down and say, this doesn't work for me. So it can really be a thin line. Wouldn't you say so sometimes?
Yes, I think so. And in finance, of course, there is the deadline and you must meet your deadlines, right? So the longer hours are expected. But as you said, you know, is it 2-3 days? Is it 1 week? Or is it constant expectation? One thing gets delivered and another thing lands on your table. If it is something that you just don't get a break from, then the price that you are paying is high. You just can't see it at the moment, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So getting a little bit personal here, but have you ever experienced the moment yourself where you had to step back and kind of reevaluate your priorities and what you were working on?
Yeah, so I speak from my own experience. I had burnout while I was in finance, and I probably was in that state for about a year without recognizing the drops into my bucket until I have lost about 90% of my hair. So how that started was I had my first patch of missing hair, and then the next one and the next one, and then they all connected to a point where, you know, I had to be wearing hats and wigs and just to disguise it. And I was going from a doctor to a doctor and they couldn't find anything wrong with me. So they didn't know what it is. And that really made me think, well, there must be something wrong. And if you're saying it's nothing in terms of disease, then is it the stress levels? Is it the life and the career that I have built up and it's not working for me?
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps here because it's such a live example of what it does to us, right? And you've experienced this firsthand on your body with all the physical signs. And of course, you may be thinking that situation to have cancer. I mean, you might be probably thinking the worst of things that could happen to you in life, right? And I won't say, oh, it's just burnout, because this is also what it does to you, right? And, you know, to be thinking that there are thousands, if not even millions, of finance professionals out there that may be feeling the same, or maybe having some of those, whether it's then the physical or the emotional or cognitive or behavioral signs, we probably all have had some of these signs and never really acted on it. Maybe because we were ashamed. I think it's natural to feel ashamed in this situation, because you're like, well, I'm working my butt off and I should be getting a promotion and all these things, but it's not really happening. And now all these things are happening to me as a person. And I can't talk to my boss about it, because what's he or she going to say? You know, are they going to let me go? You know, what's, so really people are not comfortable talking about this and dealing with these situations. So it's just really, really hard, right?
It is. And I think when it happens to you, yes, you're not paying the attention to the drops, but once it starts to impact your health, that's a high price to pay. And I think you don't want to have those conversations at work and with your manager, because a lot of people worry is that it's their problem. You know, are they not resilient enough? Are they not capable enough for the job that it's actually causing them, you know, this, whatever the signs are? And we start to worry, oh, you know, am I gonna appear weak, you know? So I think it's difficult when you find yourself in that situation. And I always say to people, when you are already at that stage, you do need to become a little bit more selfish, you know? I think that's the only way out of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let's talk ways out. Let's talk solutions, because obviously, you know, we want to leave people with something tangible that they can maybe reflect on or do after listening to this podcast here. So how can finance professionals manage their careers proactively without the burnout?
Okay, so let's presume, let's use one client, CFO comes in with already feeling they are on the way to burnout. What I would do is we would assess their capacity at the moment, right? Because it's not just the job. And that's why I'm very cautious about, it is not that it is just the finance job that causes the burnout. It's everything. You know, even for myself, it wasn't just my finance job. It was my personal life too. It's that finding the work-life balance. And if that you can't find it, that's when the burnout happens. So what I would do with a client and what I would suggest to people is to really assess their capacity, right? So what that would look like, what are all your responsibilities in your work, in your personal life? What are your stress levels within them? And really looking at it and asking yourself, does every single thing on that list require 100% of me? Because we want to give 100% to everything. We want to do everything really well and right. We don't want to drop a ball in work. We don't want to drop a ball with our families and our children or our aging parents. We want to give 100% to everything, but it is not always possible. And it's to be realistic about it, right? So at work, are there things that you need to start pushing back on? You know, are there things that you need to start delegating a little bit more? In your personal life as well, are there things that really need 100% of you, or are there things that or responsibilities that you have taken up on yourself, but they are not really yours to carry, right? And that happens a lot. I see that a lot. You know, we assume responsibility over certain things, and then it's draining because you have too much on your plate. So it's really to assess that, and. The other thing is really establishing what fills your cup, like what re-energizes you, what makes you feel better, and creating a routine to protect those parts. So whether it is going to the gym 3 times a week or going for a run or having a dinner with your family or going to a football match of your son on Saturday morning, protecting those times and really being present in those times, because you need, as I said, to be a little bit selfish, you know, and that's the only way you're not going to burn out, when you look after yourself and you protect the things that are important to you and that refill your cup. And then obviously how you live is huge impact on how you feel. So for me, part of the recovery is always not only the, you know, assessing the capacity and protecting the things that you love, but also how do you nourish your body? How do you eat? How do you exercise? Do you do anything? Because those things, we see them everywhere, right? And we know what we need to do. Everybody knows what they need to do. Like when a client comes to me, I'm not telling them something that they haven't heard before, right? But yet, how many of us really do it? You know, so that's the challenge. It's to not only know it, but to actually implement it into your days, into your routine, and seeing it as a priority.
Yeah, because... for sure. I mean, so one of the concept that we spend a lot of time on is the concept of energy management, I think, and it talks really into to what you're mentioning here as well. So you have your physical energy, your emotional energy, your mental energy, and your spiritual energy. And the spiritual energy is not, you know, it's not a religious energy. Of course, that can be that for some people, but it's really your meaning and purpose in life. Why do you do the things that you do? And having worked actively with this concept for 10 years, I could definitely say that while I don't sit down every day and look at how does my energy look like, it has definitely put me on a new path in life, I would even say, because I know, especially if I'm unbalanced emotionally, then it's really, really hard for me to function. It can be different for different people, but the energy management concept is really simple and practical and actionable and easy for people to adopt. And I think it's pretty much also what you're saying here, Michaela. So if people want to learn more about that concept, go and find the book, The Power of Full Engagement. It's highly recommendable, easy read, and it will give you a framework to address these things, right? Because like you said, Michaela, people usually know. It's not that it's rocket science that how I should treat myself, but they need a structure and framework to put it into, and some positive encouragement to move along, so to speak.
Yeah, and I also think it requires change of perspective, right? I think a lot of people don't realize just how much the stress that they are facing every single day deteriorates their body, but also their brains. And I think if you are only playing the short game of only meeting the next deadline, the next project, the right now, fighting the right now, and you don't see the longer impact of all that, then yeah, I mean, that's a losing game. You do need to change the perspective and look at it in long term. Where do you want to be when you're 60, 65? Do you want to be in a good health? So I keep saying to people, it's not just about having a career that pays you well. That's not success. Success is a career that it's sustainable. And the stress that you face every day, it depends on how you treat yourself and how you look after yourself, that you will be able to manage that stress and that you will be able to sustain the career that you're trying to have and to build. Because to me, if the great paycheck is costing you your personal life, then that's not success. If it's costing you your personal health, then that's not success. So I think it's change the perspective and think of it in a bit more long term rather than just getting over this hurdle right now.
Yeah, I know this is such great perspective. I mean, to be honest, I've never been unhappy with my paycheck. I always felt it was good. So it wasn't like I needed to chase a bigger paycheck. But you know, things really came together for me when I more clearly defined my purpose, was then became to help finance professionals be successful in their careers, help finance functions create value. Because I was doing a lot of different activities where you could say a lot of it maybe weren't realigned to anything and maybe just causing me more stress than needed. But defining that purpose gave a lot of clarity. And of course, then, you know, forming my own company together with other good people gave me the opportunity to do that every single day without someone kind of watching over me and saying, hey, now there's this deadline or that deadline. And it was very fulfilling. And it just helped me prioritize what to do and what not to do, or what to do 100% and what to do 80%. Yeah. So all these tips that you share here, it really comes together when you change this perspective. So I think that's really, really great advice there. So what role should leaders play in creating a healthier career development environment for their teams? Because leaders, they play a big role as well.
I definitely think so. And I think leaders set the pace and they set the expectation and they set the example. So when I am working with a leader, I always say to them, you first need to look after yourself, right? You are the one who carries a lot of that stress, a lot of that pressure, and you need to start looking after yourself better. And once you do that, you do set example. You know, if on a couple of days a week you leave on time and you say, you know, I'm leaving today, I have a family dinner. If you say, I am not checking emails after 8 p.m., if you say, I am not available at the weekends, you are protecting yourself, you're looking after yourself, but you're also setting the standard, the expectation. You are showing your team that it is okay not to be answering emails at 10 p.m. It is okay to take a weekend off without, you know, trying to gets things over the line. If you go and you take lunch breaks away from your computer, you know, it's people who are looking up to you will start mirroring what you do. And I think so it's good for the individual as well as for the people who report to the individual.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, leaders are beacons. And I say beacon, not role model, because, you know, role model should be a positive word, but as a beacon, it's a neutral word. Beacon can be many different things, right? But a beacon is something that is looked at naturally. And what you then see, like you just said, you know, you might mirror or mimic that kind of behavior. So if the leader is not a role model, you know, wrong behaviors will be mimicked. But if a leader is a role model, good, you know, so it's really that symbol as a leader and saying, you know, I need, of course, to you know, do what I can to for them to get the right challenges and all these things. But it really starts with the leader, him or herself. They're a good role model for what needs to be true to create a great environment for the team. Then it will probably be a great environment for the team, and the opposite will be true as well. So really, really great advice there again, Michaela. So, you know, speaking about, you spoke about changing the perspectives. So how can finance professionals redefine what success look like so it's sustainable and not just another race to the next milestone?
So redefining success, I mean, what does success mean to you is always different to what it means to the person next to you, to what it means to me, right? I think a lot of what success mean, a part of it is we inherited, you know, these expectations of our parents to have a good career, to progress up the ladder, to be well paid, and all these expectations that we have and that we mark as success. I often ask someone, because people who come to me usually are very successful, like they have good positions, they are well paid, and yet they seek coaching, right? So I think, is the success that you have right now, is it sustainable? Can you sustain it for another year, 2, 5 years? Are you living the life that you enjoy? Because it's not just about your achievements at work. It's about the whole picture. You know, do you have a time for your family? Do you have a time to be present on your kids' shows or matches or whatever it is? Like, I think defining success is, what is success to you? Is it just the achievements at work? Is it just a good title and a good salary? Or is it the full picture? And I think that's individual for everyone. You know, for me, I am more focused on the full picture. I want to be able to live up to 70, 75 in a good health. And I think it, partially for me, it comes because my mom died when she was 39, right? So that to me is something that it's important to me more so than a job that will pay me 200,000 euros, you know? So I think it's very individual for everybody. But I think if you take a holistic look at it, can you sustain what you have right now for another year or 2 or 5?
Yeah, so the point is not that we should all have the same great ambitious goals, but that we actually go through the exercise of redefining it and setting that goal. And whatever that goal is, that's okay. That's good. That's your goal. But it's like you also say, it should be sustainable also for the next 1 to 5 years at least. Of course, further out in the future is difficult to know. But at least if you're listening to this, do yourself the favor and saying, you know, how do I define what success looks like for me? And should it be different in the future than what it has been in the past? And only you know the answer, but the consequences of getting it wrong or not doing it can be severe, like we've also heard you talk about, Michaela. So I think, you know, it's not just for fun, right? It actually impacts our lives here.
Absolutely. And also, I think what you consider success now can be different to what it was to you when you were in your 20s or 30s. Yeah. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I wanted to go up that ladder as fast as possible, you know? So it's okay to readjust to where you are right now. And it can change in 5 years' time again, you know? It's just to be honest with yourself.
100%. 100%. So, you know, one final question for you, Michaela. So on the Hashtag Finance Master show, We define a finance master as someone who helps build world-class finance functions, or let's say help build world-class finance professionals. So how does supporting healthier, more balanced finance careers fit into that mission?
Okay, so I don't think you can build well-performing teams on people who are burned out, right? Or overly stressed, because it will impact their cognitive function, it will impact their emotional regulation, so therefore the decisions that they make might not be as sound. I like to think of it as, do you want to have a team made of candles, or do you want to have a team made of light bulbs, right? It's not about trying to stretch people as thin as possible with just loads of workload, and you know, what that leads to is a huge turnover of staff. It's about really developing the people and creating an ecosystem where those professionals stay long enough in your team and in your organization to actually make an impact. And that doesn't happen when all you care about is just achieving the goal this month. It has to be, again, that long-term vision of, you know, can we sustain this high performance over the years with the people we have, or do we need to every 18 months go through a learning curve of people leaving us because what we are doing is not sustainable?
No, that makes a lot of sense, Michaela. So this has been a very powerful episode, you know, also because we touched on the personal, the individual, not just, you know, what does the finance function look like in 5 years and how is AI going to do things, but really something that hopefully should hit home for most people out there. And there are a lot of people that need help. So, you know, if people want to reach out to you on that note, Michaela, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
So you can find me on, I'm very active on LinkedIn, or you can find me on www.sila.ie, and that's S-I-L-A. So it's Slovakian word because that's where I'm from and I wanted to honor my roots. So sometimes people struggle with it, but probably LinkedIn might be the easiest to find me by the name or the website.
That's great. So if you are struggling, you know, you don't have to tell your boss or your peers or anything, but reach out to someone. Michaela has a lot of experience with that, because it's not a good situation to be in. So Michaela, thanks a lot for being on the show today. It's been, yeah, like I said, a great great conversation, really impactful, I feel. Yeah, to all of you out there, thanks a lot for listening in. Hope to see you again next time.
Thank you so much for having me, Anders. Really lovely chatting to you.
You've been listening to #FinanceMaster. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.